Yes, so first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this nice workshop. I'm going to talk on the magnetic properties of the heavy fermion state in ytterbium, rhodium to silicon too. And since time is rather limited to 15 minutes, I put already here the main message of my talk, and that is that this system, ytterbium, rhodium to silicon too, is unique among all other heavy fermions, because the quantum critical fluctuations in that system have a very strong ferromagnetic component. And I will give evidence for that from different kind of experiments. I will show you that we have divergent behavior of the bulk susceptibility in the approach of the quantum critical point. I will highlight the strongly enhanced Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio in that system and the fact that we have A over chi square scaling. And at last, I will show you that that we have a field-induced 4F localization, which happens at high magnetic fields. And this is quite unique, because in contrast to all other heavy fermions, where such a field-induced 4F localization is accompanied by a jump in the magnetization, so some kind of metamagnetic-like feature, this is absent in the ytterbium rhodium to silicon 2. Here instead, the susceptibility shows a downward stop at the localization, so it's quite unique. And all this is related to the fact that we have this strong ferromagnetic component in the critical fluctuations. So in the introduction, I'd like first to mention the relevant energy scales. This is a plot of the high temperature Curie-Weiss behavior of the susceptibility, which indicates the free ytterbium 3 plus moment, which is observed at temperatures above room temperature. And here from the plot of the entropy as function of temperature, you can see that there's clear, the deviation here at lower temperatures is due to crystallactic field splitting. And from the entropy, there's evidence for doublet ground state, which is well separated from higher excited levels. The Kondor scale in this system, which we derive from the entropy, is about 25 Kelvin. And that's the same temperature which we get from this logarithmic fit of heat capacity C over T as a function of the logarithm of the temperature. And the third relevant scale is now the antiferromagnetic ordering, which happens at very low temperatures, 70 millikelvin, and which is rather weak, because the entropy at the end is only a few percent of R log 2, and the saturated moment derived from Mears R is tiny. So this is the specific heat anomaly at the antiferromagnetic ordering transition. We have well-defined kinks in susceptibility as well as in the electrical resistivity. And we can even lower or even weaken the antiferromagnetic ordering further if we substitute a few percent of silicon with the larger germanium, which expands the volume and therefore decreases the antiferromagnetic ordering. Now, we can use magnetic fields to tune the ground state of this system from that of an antiferromagnet towards the quantum critical point into Landau Fermi liquid state. And this works both for fields in the easy magnetic plane as well as for fields along the hot direction. And we have followed the properties of the Landau Fermi liquid upon tuning the system towards the critical field. And what is observed is a pronounced divergence here, for instance, in the coefficient of T-square behavior of the electrical resistivity. And we have also pronounced divergence of the Sommerfeld coefficient of the specific heat, which is stronger than logarithmic, as already mentioned. And we have similar divergence in C over T, either if we study the temperature dependence of C over T at the critical field, or if we look for the field dependence of gamma. And in both cases, either temperature itself or the magnetic field difference to the critical field define the energy scale that vanishes at the quantum critical point. And from that, it follows that there is temperature or field scaling, which we have in transport, but also in thermodynamics. Here it is shown for the entropy. And I don't have much time to go into detail, but what I want to emphasize is that we can verify the Maxwell relation, that is, that the field derivative of the entropy has to equal the temperature derivative of the magnetization. This is shown here in the lower figure, where the red points are from temperature derivative of magnetization and the blue data points are from field derivative of entropy. And that really proves that here thermal and magnetic properties prove the same degrees of freedom which are related to the quantum critical point. Now in this talk I'd like to focus on the magnetic properties. And at first I'd like to show you a plot of a temperature dependence of the susceptibility, and later I will go on with the field dependence of the susceptibility. These are AC susceptibility data, but here in the absence of any hysteresis, AC susceptibility measures the MdB, so the differential susceptibility, and we can measure that as a function of temperature at different magnetic fields. So as you can see, we have a pronounced increase of the bulk susceptibility upon lowering the temperature. That increase can be approximated by a T to the minus 0.6 dependence. And at lower temperatures, we have different behavior between these three data sets at very low fields and data sets at fields beyond 50 millitesla. So first, at low DC fields, as shown here in the chi-inverse as function of temperature plot, there is Curie-Weiss-like behavior with negative Weiss temperature, which indicates predominant antiferromagnetic correlations. Whereas now in the data beyond 50 millitesla, upon cooling, susceptibility passes the characteristic maximum and then decreases and saturates at a temperature-independent value, from which we can get the Pauli susceptibility at a given magnetic field. This Pauli susceptibility is shown here, derived from the T equals zero extrapolation of AC susceptibility, as well as from the slope of the magnetization measured at very low temperatures. So this Pauli susceptibility follows the is proportional to gamma, and it shows a pronounced increase and diverging behavior in the approach of the critical field. So this is clear evidence for divergent behavior in the Q equals zero susceptibility. And yeah, sure. So BC is the field which we have determined independently. And I want to note that the increase in chi is even stronger than that of gamma. And that means that the Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio, even at low fields, is increasing. So Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio, chi over gamma, is shown here. The values are extremely large, bigger than 15. And this is of same size than that of nearly ferromagnetic metals. And they even increase the biggest value we have at the smallest fields is even beyond 30. And that, yeah?
These are all extrapolated to T equals zero?
Yes. Where T equals zero from AC susceptibility, as well as 90 millikelvin derivative of the magnetization.
Okay. Then aren't they diverging down there?
Oops, here. So they are diverging as function of field. But we take now the ratio of these data of at a given field of susceptibility divided by a specific key. And furthermore, it's interesting that in the entire field range here, A over chi square is constant. And that would not be expected if the antiferromagnetic fluctuations dominate. Because the resistivity is dominated by the large Q scattering, whereas this is the Q equals zero susceptibility. So in the approach of an antiferromagnetic quantum critical point, we would not expect that such kind of constant A over chi square is expected. If for an antiferromagnetic quantum critical point, A should diverge much stronger than the Q equals zero susceptibility, because it does not directly couple to the critical fluctuation. Well, we are not sure whether this holds down to, yeah. But at least in a very large, over two decades in magnetic field, it is constant. So in this entire field range, the ferromagnetic fluctuations must dominate. Yeah, thanks a lot. That's just my next point. So here's a phase diagram where I want to discuss that. that's temperature as function of field. And in the inside, I have enlarged the region close to the origin. So this is the tiny antiferromagnetic ordered state, which is surrounded by this red shaded area, which extends up to 300 millikelvin, where we have Curie-Weiss law in the susceptibility with a negative Weiss temperature. And in this range also the NMR experiments that Katrin was just mentioning indicated that the antiferromagnetic fluctuations dominate. Except for this region, the system behaves as if one would approach a ferromagnetic quantum critical point, because we have this divergent Pauli susceptibility in all these field range here coming down from 10 Tesla. Now, there is a crossover line here which is clearly different from the upper limit of the Landau Fermi liquid. And this crossover is constructed by taking the susceptibility maxima. So at a given temperature, the magnetic susceptibility, as this line shows, a maximum. And beyond this maximum, the state is ferromagnetically polarized. And as one expects for ferromagnetic polarization, this temperature, the characteristic field, if temperature increases, increases in size.
I don't understand, but raise the temperature and become more ferromagnetic.
No, I say that if you raise the temperature, you need more field to ferromagnetically polarize the system. So this is the susceptibility maxima which I've shown you in the plot before. Yeah, from temperature speeds, yes. The black dots here on this line are for the this is 5% germanium doped, and the black dots are for the non-doped pure terbium rhodium to silicon 2. There is no difference between the two systems for this line. And here, these symbols represent the specific heat maxima. So in temperature sweeps, the maxima in C over T, where we have, which can be taken as an upper limit for the Landau Fermi liquid state. So now, I want to emphasize that this behavior is quite different to what has been observed in the cerium copper gold system, where one has this this non-Curie-Weiss behavior with a vanishing Weiss temperature at the antiferromagnetic Q vector. So there, for the bulk susceptibility, Q equals zero susceptibility, theta is negative, indicating an antiferromagnetic correlations. Whereas here, as shown in the inset, in a very large temperature range, the Weiss temperature is zero for the bulk susceptibility, so indicating the dominant ferromagnetic component. Yes, it might be that here it's Q independent, and that the finite Q, which leads then to the ordering, would always follow this line. But we cannot, since neutron scattering hasn't been performed, we cannot say about that.
Why do we say that theta equals zero corresponds to ferromagnetic
component? Yeah, because we have diverging behavior. If this would end up towards the origin, we would have a divergence of the Q equals zero susceptibility, as if we would approach a ferromagnetic T equals zero transition.
Yeah, but just tell me
I can show that if you like.
Just answer this question. The night shift is
Yeah, and the night shift as well is highly enhanced, so therefore,
yes.
From NMR it also follows that there is a strong ferromagnetic component in the critical fluctuations. And only at fields very close to the critical field, there is a disparity between 1 over T1 T, which is measures the Q average, and the night shift, which measures Q equals 0. But in all this range here, they are proportional to each other, which could only mean that either it's completely Q independent or the Q equals zero dominates.
What's the magnetization doing? It's like a continuous metamagnetic condition.
That's so that's now exactly what I want to to tell you in the last part. Okay. So now in the last part, I'd like to show data on the field-induced 4F localization, which happens at a field B star of 10 Tesla. So we have evidence for that at first from magnet restriction experiments taken at very low temperatures, which indicate that the sample volume shrinks upon applying a magnetic field up to 10 Tesla, and then the behavior changes. And this is consistent with the picture that this magnetic field, we favor the magnetic ytterbium 3+ configuration, which has smaller volume than the non-magnetic one. So therefore, by applying magnetic field in ytterbium systems, typically you have a decrease of the sample volume. And the fact that we have this minimum and then an increase at higher magnetic fields tells us that 10 Tesla is the field where we have reached a complete localized ytterbium 3+ state. And beyond that field, we just have the usual positive magnet restriction. So 10 Tesla is a field which localizes the 4F state in this system. And at this magnetic field, we have a pronounced decrease of the A coefficient, which measures the T square behavior and resistivity. Note that this is a logarithmic scale which spans three decades, and there is at least one decade decrease in the A coefficient, which indicates the suppression of the heavy fermion state going along as expected with the 4F localization. So such suppression of the heavy fermion state going along with 4F localization has been observed in many heavy fermion systems. But what is unique in this system is that this is not accompanied by any signature of metamagnetism. Instead, magnetization already in the low field state is so high that we only observe a kink at this anomaly. And if we apply hydrostatic pressure, this kink sharpens and the characteristic field decreases with increasing pressure. So if we would plot this B star anomaly, it's B star as a function of pressure, and this is a logarithmic scale, we get an exponential dependence which follows the same with the same rate that we observe for the condor temperature, which is derived from specific heat measurements under pressure. So this clearly proves that both B star and that B star is related to the condor scale for which we expect such exponential pressure dependence. Now, if we look for the susceptibility, so the derivative of these curves, like that, so completely different to other heavy fermions where we have a peak. Here we have only a step-like decrease at B star. So this is a comparison to cerium ruthenium to silicon 2, where we have this jump in the magnetization at the metamagnetic transition, a sharp peak in the susceptibility. And there, at this field which localizes the F electrons, the system switches from a state where the antiferromagnetic correlations dominate to a high field state where we have localized F electrons which are ferromagnetically polarized. And in that system, okay, we have decay and the energy scale of the antiferromagnetic correlations, they are of the same order of magnitude. So the antiferromagnetic correlations can survive till decay is killed by the large magnetic field. That's completely different in the ytterbium rhodium to silicon too, because there decays 25 Kelvin, but the scale of the antiferromagnetic correlations is very small. The ordering happens only at 70 millikelvin, and it's suppressed already at 60 millitesla. So with field, the antiferromagnetic correlations are much faster suppressed than the condor scale, and therefore we have no metamagnetic transition in that system. So all this proves that the quantum critical fluctuations have a dominating ferromagnetic component in this system. So I've shown you evidence for divergence of the bulk susceptibility, strongly enhanced Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio, A over chi square is constant. And there is absence of metamagnetism at the field-induced 4F localization. And if we would put that in a very schematic Cantor diagram, we have here temperature and here magnetic field. There are two different characteristic temperatures, two different characteristic fields. We have here the condor scale of 25 Kelvin, very broad crossover, which gets sharper when we come to low temperatures where the system gets coherent, which gives rise to a sharp kink in magnetization here, which which is the localization of the 4F electrons. Here's the antiferromagnetic ordering, and this green Gauss over line, which also coincides with the Gauss over that has been observed in the Hall effect measurements, is the line beyond which we have the ferromagnetically polarized state. Okay, thank you for your attention.
Hey, thank you, Philip. Questions from us?
Yeah, I have some question. These compounds, I think, are not really oxidized like other metals. In other words, you can formally call it phosphorus, if you refer to thallium or F shell. But it's not as if they're real halides, like being formed in combination with oxygen. As you refer to your scenario with the spectrum of field, you change the F-shell occupation. It's not really oxidized in this way, so it's not really an ion, and you apply pressure to the system. You may be the trend in the atomic volume would actually be opposite to what you say. If you go from F40 to F30, it means you put four electrons in the outer shell of the same energy. And that actually increases the volume. So, this is a comment and a question. I'm not sure whether what I'm saying is really applicable.
Could you divide out your comments and your questions in two parts? State the question, state the comment.
Okay, so there's only a comment in that case. So my comment is that I suspect that if you compare the atomic volume of an atom which has 14 F electrons and 13 F electrons, that the atomic volumes will actually be the other way around, as you say. And that's because the atom doesn't only contain F electrons, it also has 5 D electrons. In a compound like this, it is likely to be electrically neutral as an atom. So changing the number of F electrons has the opposite change, results in the opposite change of the number of outer 5D electrons. But these 5D electrons actually determine the size of the atom because they are sitting outside.
I mean, I don't want to state that the low field state has an terbium 2 plus valency. The valency will be very extremely close to 3 plus. Because of the lower characteristic temperature. I mean, this is not a violent fluctuating compound, so the valency might be 2.999 something.
Sure, but what I'm saying
and
is...
And as far as I know, in all erbium systems, this kind of behavior is observed, that the length shrinks with increasing field. And it has always been interpreted in this picture for all...
I think the effect is that if you put a F electron out of the shell, then of course the nuclear...
No, this is both field. This is perpendicular C and parallel A, so it's both in the easy plane. We always in all these experiments have applied the magnetic field in the easy plane, except for the Hall effect measurements where the field has been applied on the hard direction, to have a weak influence of the field on the fluctuations.
But you know what happens.
Yeah, so we have measured magnetization along the hard direction, and it was almost linear up to 50 Tesla, even in pulse field. So we cannot see any curvature.
So it's Greg, then John, and then okay, Greg. Go ahead.
Just very quickly, thank you for coming to this slide. You're looking at the suppression of the heavy fermion state at 10 Tesla, and you're looking at the resistivity.
Yes. Yes.
Have you looked at the actual specific heat?
Yes, sure. This is shown here. So the gamma are the solid black solid dots, and they also show step-like decays. And that's also quite different to cerium, ruthenium, to silicon too, where you have a maximum in gamma.
Okay, well, that's no longer your log scale that you had in the A coefficient. Remember,
no.
You were selling it, the A coefficient is making a big change there.
The fact is here, so we have scaled susceptibility and specific heat such that they fall on top of each other here. So this is the very large, very enhanced Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio. And on the Highfield state, the Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio is much lower. And therefore here, gamma saturates at higher values than chi.
So Philippe, you have a very small Tn. You have a very tiny moment which orders antiferromagnetically in the plane. So why should not a field, a tiny field applied here, immediately induce ferromagnetic polarization?
Yeah, it is like that.
Yeah.
The field is only 60 millitesla.
Yeah, so what is so exceptional here?
Yeah, because there is no. Do you know any other heavy fermion system where you have such behavior at the...
I don't know of any other systems which have such tiny moments. It's the tiny moment will be felt in a very tiny field, and will just
but the point is that this field is that the characteristic scale of the tiny moment is completely different to the Kondo scale.
I just got somewhat confused about the sign of the dependence of the AR coefficient on the field. Wouldn't you expect that if you localize F electrons, the Fermi energy of the electrons goes down and the AR coefficient would diverge rather than go to zero?
Yeah, but in this system, we with field, we move away from the quantum critical point. So we have the critical field very close to zero. You can't even see it here. So A coefficient diverges in the approach of the critical field. And if we apply field, we move away and therefore gamma and the A coefficient go down. Because the effective scale, if we apply a field, goes up, because this scale vanishes at the quantum critical point.
Picking up John's point again, and perhaps you could go back to your schematic phase diagram. Indeed, in many other rarer systems that are local moments, you see metamagnetism where you go from an anti-ferromagnetic state to one that has a net ferromagnetism or saturated paramagnetism. I believe we see a very similar phase diagram and behavior in the ytterbium silver germanium also.
Yeah, but here's no metamagnetism because
there's
no jump in the magnetization.
Well, your magnetization, as you show it, rises rapidly and then saturates.
But it is completely different to the magnetization in systems like cerium, ruthenium, to silicon too, because
it's
curved like that. It's not upwards curved. So the susceptibility just shows a downwards drop and no peak at all, nothing.
Yeah, but seeing it's one of the interesting questions. It's not to go into the details of this. In this is for both the ytterbium rhodium to silicon II as well as the ytterbium silver germanium, is to try to see if there's any insight to be gained by comparing them to the type of physics that you actually see in the local moment systems too, which have been studied a lot. I think you're seeing Kondo physics overlaid on top of it. And the question is, what's the interaction between this standard metamagnetism and progression from antiferromagnet to something that has a ferromagnetic character? How does that fold into the Kondo physics? I think there's something to be learned by looking or remembering some of the local moment physics too. Maybe John wants to comment again.
I have a question myself. I mean, concerning these fluctuations of ferromagnetic components, did you measure the frequency dependence of the susceptibility? Because one might speculate that you might have some sort of ferromagnetic clusters, which of course give rise to very large moments, and that could, a few clusters could actually produce a susceptibility of the order you're observing.
So we have looked for frequency dependence in AC susceptibility, and we couldn't detect anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we have full quantitative comparison between our AC susceptibility data and the field derivative of the DC magnetization. And we have no signal in the hysteretic part, so we are quite sure that we are in the static limit in our experiment.
I just want to go back to what you said about the scaling of the A coefficient for the susceptibility squared. I mean, in two other systems that show a quantum critical point or a near quantum critical point, that is strontium-ruthenium A327 and cerium-ruthenium-2-silicon 2, I think the A coefficient scales with gamma squared, and of course you show that the Wilson ratio diverges in your case near the quantum critical point. And I just wonder, what in your opinion is the reason why here you've got A over chi squared scaling, while in these other two systems you've got A over gamma squared scaling?
Yeah, this is a very interesting point. So in our case, A over gamma squared is only constant in this range here, where Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio is constant, and then A over gamma squared increases or diverges. But the fact that A over chi squared is constant is really a big mystery. But it is clearly incompatible if we had predominant antiferromagnetic fluctuations.
But
more questions? Brian, you want a mic?
I just wanted to raise an experimental issue. Over the years, we've dealt with a lot of rare earth compounds or uranium compounds, and invariably they contain at least some small amounts of paramagnetic impurities. And when you measure the magnetization, this superimposes on, possibly a linear magnetization, a Brillouin function. And in many cases, you can actually subtract off a Brillouin function that will correspond to a few parts per million of rare earth impurities, say gadolinium or holmium or what have you. And then you, if you do that, you arrive at a rather sometimes different temperature dependence of the susceptibility. And I've never really known over the years what's the right thing to do, because of course it could be that the intrinsic magnetization is curved. So it's just an issue that I think one should bear in mind, especially when you're working at very low temperatures, and it's something that we all have to worry about. I don't know the answer, but I just raised the issue.
Yes, so I was just looking whether I find a plot of the magnetization measured along the two directions, along C-axis and in the plane, but unfortunately I couldn't find. So the magnetization along the hot direction is tiny compared to the magnetization in the easy plane. And we look carefully for the magnetization on the hot direction, whether we see any kind of saturation of impurities. And we couldn't find it there, so therefore we are quite confident that there is no impurity contribution for the magnetization in the easy plane.
I think that's a good idea. Pierce, go ahead. You don't need a mic.
I had a question trying to connect your remarks about paramagnetic fluctuations with the ESR results that you've had for some time. You may or may not know that in this same system that you can actually pick up an ESR signal, which is rather unusual for the electron system. And it was previously interpreted in terms of a reduction of the conduct temperature. My question to you was, could it be that the unusual ESR signal is actually another indication of slow ferromagnetic fluctuations in the system, that the interpretation of that narrow line as being a small conduct temperature could actually be slow ferromagnetic fluctuations?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We saw it recently with Jörg Sichelschmidt, and we found in literature that there was observation of conduction electron ESR in nearly ferromagnetic metal, like for instance titanium, beryllium too. They were able to detect electron spin resonance, but this is a completely itinerant, nearly ferromagnetic metal. So therefore, it might well be that this observation is due to the effect of this strong ferromagnetic fluctuation. Yes.
Any more questions?
Yeah. I mean, this. So therefore, this must not be an indication that this is local moment electron spin resonance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It might be conduction electron spin resonance in the background of a very of a nearly ferromagnetic metal.
Yeah, that has been the conjecture of the last few months.
Mm. Yeah, heavy, nearly ferromagnetic conduction electron.
I have a question concerning the specific heat. You mentioned that you also measured the pressure dependence. What actually happens, remind us, to this T to the minus one-third upturn when you apply pressure?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have the plot here. This is a paper from Mederle and Günther Spahn. And the fact is, Tn increases with pressure. And therefore, we move out the region where we have the upturn in specific heat. And we just observe then the phase transition moving up.
Okay.
And the logarithmic increase of C over T at higher temperatures. Mm-hmm. So the upturn region is suppressed with pressure.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Yes, Pierce.
Comment on the prospects for neutron data on this material. Is it a hopeless prospect or?
I'm not quite aware on the recent status, so one has to talk to Oliver Stockert, who is doing this job. There are several problems. One is the lack of large single crystals, but I'm not aware of the situation right now.
ITC people like Bernard Keimer, they take 70 of those. D-twin crystals, for examples, and then they just collect them and do inelastic neutron scattering.
I know that he started studying crystallactic field excitations, and I know that he was looking for the antiferromagnetic break reflections under pressure. So he uses a pressure cell to enlarge Tn and to stabilize the antiferromagnetic order. But as far as I know, he hasn't yet succeeded to find any magnetic break reflections.
Any more questions, comments? We'll have early coffee break. Thank you very much again, and we'll reconvene at 10:30.